WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The two warring factions in Sudan battling for control of the capital city, Khartoum, have agreed to extend a ceasefire for another 72 hours. CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland.
The goal of the ceasefire is to oversee the creation of a committee for negotiations and implementation of a permanent cessation to hostilities. This effort will be likely led by the so-called Quad, which includes the United States, United Kingdom, United Arab Emirates, as well as Saudi Arabia.
Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder.
In terms of next steps, U.S. Africa Command and the Department of Defense continue to work closely with State Department, which has the lead for helping American citizens wishing to depart Sudan.
The prosecutor investigating whether then-President Trump and his allies illegally interfered in the 2020 election in Georgia expects to announce charging decisions in the case this summer and urges heightened security. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
Messaging that they're going to have charging decisions and urging heightened security is really a message that somebody of great importance is likely to be indicted, and that law enforcement and security around the courthouse has to be addressed.
Fox News abruptly parts ways with anchor Tucker Carlson. It comes after Fox agreed to pay nearly $800 million for making false claims about Dominion voting systems. CBS's Jerika Duncan outside Fox News headquarters.
Carlson's controversial comments over the years led many advertisers to flee at times, but some of his rhetoric would have obviously gotten him fired at many media companies. But his ratings soared, which brought Fox News a lot of money and brought him more airtime until now.
In the wake of the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, the Texas State House approves school safety legislation. Reporter Chris Fox in Austin.
The Texas House voted 122 to 19 in favor of State Rep. Dustin Burrow's omnibus school safety bill. It would require schools to have active shooter safety plans, also armed security on every public school campus.
When a shooter decides to rampage, the full-time presence of well-trained armed security officer can help save precious minutes and lives.
House Democrats unsuccessfully pushed for tougher gun regulations. State Rep. Honor Maria Ramos.
The way to stop this insanity is not by putting more guns on campuses, but by passing sensible gun laws.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
The Tennessee Three have had a sit-down at the White House with President Biden and Vice President Harris. Representative Justin Pearson, who along with Justin Jones was expelled by Republicans for leading a gun protest in the Tennessee chamber, joined fellow Democrat Gloria Johnson as their governor is calling for a special session to consider red flag laws. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Is your vehicle no longer stopping like it used to? Don't miss Spring Brake Deals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Our professional parts people will help you find the brake parts and supplies you need. Now through April 25th, get 15% off when you buy a set of Brake Best Select or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Every piece of land has a story. For the Caggianos, it's keeping their yard pristine with a John Deere Z530MC track mower. Because it's not just a yard, it's a gathering place.
Work and play kind of meld together for us.
They run a brewery, harvest their own hops, and keep things tidy for their guests.
People say, what are you? Are you a farmer or a brewer? So I say, I'm a farmer brewer.
When you love what you do, it's not really work. Run with us on a Z530M mower and start telling your story. Learn more at johndeere.com/radio.
The key slides into the ignition. The engine rumbles to life. My hand grips the throttle. New gear for my ride. The road, my invitation. The sound, the smell, the exhilaration. I am one with the bike. And the car in front of me suddenly turns in my lane. Motorcycles are everywhere, but too often go unnoticed. Please, always look twice, be alert, and share the road with motorcycles at all times. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swollen. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows dip down to about 32 tonight under overcast skies with a chance for mixed precipitation changing to all snow. Winds out of the northeast, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies. Tomorrow, mixed precipitation possible at times. Highs level off around 47. Lows dip down to about 28. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 41.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we're paying attention, you're seeing this well-funded, well-planned-out assault on public education. And we're really witnessing, quite frankly, the corporatization, the sanitation, and the complete rewriting of our history in a way that, well, we working people, maybe we're never going to learn the power of us coming together and the power that working people have. You know, as longtime listeners of the program know, back in 2013, we did a labor history tour, took us coast to coast. And, you know, out of that came Daddy, What's the Middle Class? You can get that at our website. But what we learned is, you know, labor history, virtually corporatized, virtually rewritten, but for the passions of a few educators, the courageous educators who want to keep this alive. And you may remember, we went to Blair Mountain, where they literally removed the town and wanted to take the mountain with them. That's why I think we're in a moment. Because one of the stops we made on the tour was in Memphis, Tennessee, to talk about the 1968 sanitation strike that took Dr. Martin Luther King to Memphis and ultimately to his death. And look, the reality is this is a perfect moment to talk about workers' history, to talk about civil rights history, and to bring it in a way that people are going to learn from, get a little historic context from. And that's why I'm thrilled to see that our friends over at AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, have chosen this moment to produce a multi-episode podcast titled The I Am Story Podcast that is bringing workers' rights, civil rights, community rights, human rights together. And that's why I've asked AFSCME President Lee Saunders to come share some thoughts with us and maybe get a little context. Lee, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be with you, Rick.
So tell me, I've been talking about civil rights and labor rights and the history of the two and how they work together. To me, this should be the number one story taught in school if you're going to talk about either or both of those things. Why do you think it's not?
Well, you have people who don't want us to understand our history and the importance of our history. I have a saying, and a lot of people have heard it, where if you are trying to get somewhere and you understand where you've got to go, you've got to understand where you've been. And that history is so important. The history of the labor movement is so important. The history of civil rights is so important. And we have got to teach that. Regardless of people trying to take it away from us, these are important pieces of American history. And that's the purpose of this podcast, The I Am Story, because it goes back to 1968 when you had 1,300 African-American sanitation workers who were being disrespected, mistreated, not being treated like human beings, and they decided that enough was enough. They worked on those trucks every single day, picking up the trash, providing an essential service to the citizens of Memphis. Yet they worked in unhealthy conditions, with low pay, low benefits, and they did not have a seat at the table. And they decided they wanted to have a union represent them. And the city blocked it, Local 1733 of AFSCME. The city blocked it. And they kept on fighting, and they kept on pushing. But the tipping point was when two sanitation workers getting out of bad weather in Memphis went into the back of a sanitation truck, and the equipment malfunctioned, and the crusher in that truck went down on them, and they were killed. And the sanitation workers had said that there were malfunctions in those trucks and had told the city that day after day after day, and they ignored it. And that was the breaking point where the sanitation workers said, enough is enough, and we've got to make our voices heard.
No, and the amazing thing is look, you know, we both know throughout history the names, you know, Eckel Cole and Robert Walker, if not for this, are forgotten to history. And there are thousands of other people, you know, throughout our course of history that the moment didn't spark. What was it about this moment that this spark caught? What do you think that was that because as I've said, we've heard stories of, you know, thousands of workers who have been killed on the job and forgotten to history. What was it about this one that was different?
It was so real to them. And they had been fighting these issues for so long and bringing them to the attention of a government that didn't care about them. Bringing it to the attention of the city council and the mayor who did not care about them. And sooner or later, you have that breaking point, Rick, where you say, we can't do this anymore. We've got to do something differently. And that's what happened when they walked off the job. They said enough was enough. And if you recall, they walked around with those signs. This happened a little bit later, but they walked around with those signs that simply said, I am a man. Very simple slogan, but it said a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
It talked about their plight and who they were. And what happened in Memphis, Tennessee, when the community came together, when the religious community came together, the clergy, when the families came together and said, enough is enough, and we've got to make our voices heard. And Dr. King understood the importance of this strike. If you recall, he was planning the Poor People's March. And he read about the strike and talked to an individual named Dr. James Lawson, who was a religious leader in Memphis, Tennessee. And Dr. Lawson was telling him about the struggle and the fact that if he believed, and he knew that he believed in the connection between civil rights and human rights and economic and racial justice, then Dr. King would have to travel to Memphis and stand up for those workers. And that's exactly what Dr. King did, even when some of his closest advisors were telling him, don't go to Memphis. We're planning something much more important. Dr. King essentially said, I've got to support these workers. This is what I'm all about. And he galvanized that whole community, and the community came together to fight and make their voices heard.
No, it's an important bit of history to remember. And you know, I think back to when we were in Memphis talking about this on our tour back in 2013. And what we found across the country when talking about labor history and the plight of workers fighting for better wages, hours, and conditions, and the places that were successful, it was the pulling together of the community. It was religious leaders coming together. It was a unity that it wasn't just the handful of workers that were benefiting. It was all of us. It was everybody involved. And I think that's an important lesson that I think has to be learned today again.
I think you're exactly right. It has to be people who share the same kinds of concerns, who want justice, who want a seat at that table, who don't want to be mistreated, coming together and saying that we cannot take this anymore and we aren't going to take it anymore. And we're going to make our voices heard every single day. You look at what's happening in this country today with our freedoms basically being under attack, whether it's civil rights, whether it's education, whether it's issues affecting abortion, all of those kinds of issues, voting rights, those freedoms are under attack, and people have got to come together and say enough is enough. And there is power in numbers when people are reacting to something and believe believe that those freedoms are under attack, then we can make a difference in this country. And that's what we've got to do. That's what those sanitation workers did in 1968. Yeah. That's what we've got to do now.
No, and it's, look, this is a perfect time for this, I think, because as the interest in labor is at an all-time high, at least in my lifetime, where we're seeing a lot of organizing happening, we're seeing some strikes going on. This idea that we can make things better for the future. Inflation's crazy. We've had 40 years of stagnant and declining wages. We've got a working class under assault. It's these stories of struggle, these stories of victory that ultimately I hope will educate people and move them in the right direction. But this wasn't an easy victory. I mean, we like to look back on things in the past with kind of, you know, rose glasses. This was a hard-fought struggle. These were people, real sufferers, really suffering. And I think your podcast did a good job of grabbing some of that and saying, look, this was hard on families. This was hard on the communities. This was tough stuff.
Well, in our podcast, we tried to recreate the moment. And we have we're going to have six podcasts which talk about the strike in different segments, where we are talking with people like Reverend Lawson, who lives in California now. He's still living. And he shared with us what was going on then. We talked to Bill Lucy, who was then an executive assistant to President Jerry Wirth of AFSCME. He then became the secretary treasurer of AFSCME. And he was there from the beginning working with those sanitation workers. We talked with Martin Luther King III, and he shared his father's vision and the reasons why he believed, Dr. King believed, that he must go to Memphis to bring this together, to bring the community together, to have one single voice, to fight back these kinds of injustices. And then we talked with the actual sanitation workers, present and those who are retired now, who participated in the strike to get their feelings about what was happening, what has changed, what remains the same. And so we bring this all together in these podcasts because this is an important part of our history. And people have got to understand that if, in fact, you come together and you identify what needs to be fought for, then we can win. We can win if you come together and form that large community that they were able to form in Memphis and that we can do right now. To fight the injustices that exist.
And you can take on City Hall. Looking at one of the podcast episodes, talked about, you know, the union organizers going in to talk to the mayor, and the mayor thinking that he's John Wayne with a gun under the table.
Gun in the room, yep.
You know, it's one of those things that when you start to think about the force and the power that these workers had to overcome, the violence in the street by police, the constant attacks, but yet they still moved forward because as the saying is, you know, they were fighting for their humanity.
They were fighting for their humanity. And Dr. King understood that. And Dr. King ultimately gave his life in support of that strike and in support of the humanity of those workers. And we can never, ever forget that. And people would like to erase it from the history books, but we can't let them do that.
Yeah.
That is an important part of our history, and we've got to teach our youngsters and our people that, you know, what happened in this country that was good didn't just magically fall from the sky. It came from organization and our communities mobilizing and fighting back and making their voices heard.
And this is why, again, you know, back in 2013, we did our labor history tour. In 2015, we did a civil rights tour to talk about labor's involvement in the civil rights movement. It's important to remember these things, to pass them on to the next generation. And I think of my own kids. You know, part of the reason we did these tours is, well, part for the radio show and the TV show we do, but also for my kids, to give them a rounder depth to their understanding of history. And this is what's frustrating in this moment for me, Lee. There is a movement in this country that wants to completely sanitize what our kids are exposed to and have an education curriculum that doesn't include labor's history or civil rights history or who we are as a country. It's kind of frightening to me.
Well, that's not an education at all, is it? That's not an education at all.
No, it's more like an indoctrination, but I was giving them
When you exclude those very important points in our history, that's not about education. It's about trying to control. Okay? And taking away what they don't want to talk about or want to hear. And they don't want their children to hear it or their communities to hear it because they have a different agenda. And that agenda is not to support working families or our communities or people of color. And that agenda is not to talk about economic justice and labor rights and racial justice. That's not their agenda. Their agenda is to control in the strongest possible way they can by limiting the kind of information that people should understand and know about.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with AFSCME President Lee Saunders. You want to check out their website. AFSCME.org is the site. We'll get links out. If you want to check out the podcast, most certainly we'll get links out to the I Am Story podcast. And you can take a look at that. I want to get your thoughts on there's this weird kind of dynamic going on. Our billionaire class has all the money, doing a masterful job slicing and dicing and tearing us apart based on race, on gender, on color, whatever dividing lines they can come up with. To me, this podcast series, it shows that you can overcome this. I look at the Bread and Roses strike, the 1912 Lawrence textile strike, a way to get over multiple language barriers and bring people together. I look at this as one of those things where white and black. Let me ask you this way then. How much did race play into this, given the fact that AFSCME was led by a white guy and was predominantly black workers? How important was that, and how did they overcome it?
Well, I think it was extremely important that the union, headed by Jerry Wirth, who was the president then, understood that there had to be a connection, and labor had a responsibility to fight for these workers. And he sent Bill Lucey, who was African-American, who was his executive assistant, down to organize and mobilize those communities. He got it. And Jerry Wirth stood for the fact that if a worker was being mistreated, whether that worker was black, white, whatever color they were, they needed to have a seat at the table and representation by a union. And that's why he jumped in to this effort. And he traveled to Memphis on many occasions to fight for those workers. He connected arms when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. went down to Memphis. And they both understood that with that connection, in talking about labor rights, in talking about civil rights, in talking about economic justice, then that would be a powerful force that you could not deny. And would the fight be hard? Sure it would be. Sure it would be. But in the end, those workers were able to win. And we can never forget the fact that regardless of the struggle and the loss of life and what those workers were going through there, they were able to achieve a contract. They were able to be represented by a union. And that fight continues today. Make no mistake about it. I mean, you still have forces in the society who don't believe in strong unions. They don't want workers to have a seat at that table, and they will fight against it every single day. You look at the new organizing that's taking place in this country, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Walmart, whether it's Starbucks, whether it's certain areas in the public sector, where people do not want to give up that power, and they don't want to share that power with workers. And we know that's wrong. And I believe that the majority of Americans know that's wrong. 70% of Americans believe that unions are absolutely necessary in this country right now to be a counterbalance and counterforce. But the deck sometimes is stacked against us because the labor laws in this country are so archaic, and they block attempts by unions, and not only unions, but workers to organize themselves into a powerful force.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. I mean, because it's often framed in a way that, I win, you lose. These scenarios have to be, there's winners and losers, instead of, look, I mean, an injury to one is an injury to all. And when you do better, I'm going to do better. And this is kind of the moment where I think, and again, I think this podcast series is important in this moment, because it ties those themes together. Because right now we're being torn apart. Now it's not so much, it's still white, black, but a lot of it's gender now. I talk to a lot of my working class friends, and it all comes down to, we're fighting against this person's right or that person's right. And I say at the end of the day, I may not understand all of it, but in the workplace, everyone should have the dignity of a decent wage, of decent benefits, of safe working conditions. That should be a non-starter, I think.
And that's what unions do. And that's what our allies believe in, that people deserve that. Workers deserve that. And nobody should try to take that away from workers who are providing essential services, who are doing the right thing, who are trying to play by the rules every single day, but in many cases being mistreated and abused at the worksite. So and that's what unions are all about. And that's why we've got to continue to come together. But it's going to take more than just the labor unions in this country. It's going to take a mass movement in this country of people who believe that everyone deserves a chance. Everybody needs to be treated with dignity and respect. And that includes on the job and off the job. And we've got to continue to fight for that.
There you go. Last line of question I've got for you. With this podcast series coming out, what are you hoping? What do you hope comes out of this? You know, it's well produced. It's educational. It's informative. It was riveting. I was riding my bike listening to the whole thing. In fact, rode longer than I probably should have. What are you hoping comes out of this?
We just want people to understand, and we want people to connect with what was happening, and the power that people have when we come together to make change. And it's not impossible. If those sanitation workers were successful in their fight, even with all of the misery and all of the sacrifices that were made by so many people, if they were successful in that fight, and they were, then we can continue to be successful in the fights that we're engaged in today. And we want people to make that connection. And don't throw up your hands and walk away and say, it doesn't matter. It does matter. It does matter. But we've got to make our voices heard and fight for it. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
There you go. The podcast series, the I Am Story podcast. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Lee, I appreciate the time. Good stuff. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon.
I'd be happy to, Rick. Good seeing you.
All righty. Lee Saunders, president of AFSCME, AFSCME.org, the website. Want to hear your thoughts? You got stories? You got questions, comments? Want to hear it? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
It really is an amazing story if you stop and think about it. And the fact that this isn't one of the central things taught in our schools is really quite a shame. I mean, it does bring together the struggle of workers to earn a decent wage and to be respected, of a community of organizing to make lives better, of a civil rights movement seeking to create equality and you know, just to demand being recognized as human. It's always amazing to me that this was never taught in school. And I didn't learn about it in school either, which is why when we did our labor history tour, Memphis was one of the spaces we had to stop, because this is an important moment in not just labor's history, but in the history of this country, of the civil rights movement, of the movement of, you know, of just being part of the working class. And the fact that it's not taught in schools is well, not surprising, I guess. And, you know, as I've said, you know, we did those tours in 2013 and 2015, a labor history tour and a civil rights tour, labor's involvement in the civil rights movement in 15, where we went to all of these places that corporate interests and, well, the moneyed folks were attempting to rewrite it. And as I've said about, you know, civil rights history in this country, we went to a bunch of places in the South where black people were treated horribly. I mean, just some of the worst kind of moments of man's inhumanity to man. And now there's a museum.
Smiles are powerful. They spread joy, laughter, and hope. But not everyone gets a fair chance at a smile. Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. In America, most children with clefts receive immediate care, but others around the world may never have access to the surgery they need to thrive. SmileTrain is changing that. As the world's largest cleft charity, our sustainable model has sponsored more than 1.5 million smiles. We offer training and financial support to local medical professionals so they can provide life-changing surgery and other essential services at no cost to families.
It's more than to see these children, to hear the difference that we make. And for me, being born with a cleft lip and palate, knowing what they went through is so life-changing for me.
Help us change the world one smile at a time. To learn more, visit smiletrain.org/learn.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your mind, Gina Beauclair?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Papa, why can't we telegraph while riding a horse?
Son, there ain't no one to blame but Jeffro. He was riding old Betsy the Stallion, tip-tapping away at his telegraph, when blam! Ran right into the side of the saloon.
Well, if Jeffro can't do it, neither should you. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What if one day you went to your secret hiding place? You know, that spot that only you know about? And instead of what you came for, you found something a little different. What if instead of your private stash, you found a simple phone number? 1-800-662-HELP. What would you do? Would you stop and give it some thought? Would you make the call? The truth is, all drug use comes with risk. Before those risks become real, before drugs turn your life upside down, before drugs take their toll on you and your family, know that there is help. You can quit. If you or someone you love is struggling with drug use or prescription drug misuse, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, or go to samhsa.gov/thereishelp.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
Tired of low or no connectivity? Do you live in BTN, Bug Tussle Nowhere? We want to talk to you. Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet to the places others don't. No contracts, no data caps, truly unlimited internet. Call 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows dip down to about 32 tonight under overcast skies with a chance for mixed precipitation changing to all snow. Winds out of the northeast, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies. Tomorrow, mixed precipitation possible at times. Highs level off around 47. Lows dip down to about 28. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 41.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
If you view it from the heights of Wall Street, thank you, Steve. Now, go away.
Welcome Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
It's our quote of the day. Chris Christie was being interviewed by the Daily Beast, and he said that he's a viable Trump alternative. Okay. If you think so, Chris. But here's the thing. Maybe. You know, the fact of the matter is, over the weekend, I saw Governor Chris Sununu come out and say that Trump's a loser. So I find that he says, you know, Republicans want someone who can win in November of 2024. Donald Trump is a loser. He has not just lost once. He lost us in our House seats in 2018. He lost everything in 2020. We should have 54 U.S. senators now, according to Chris Sununu, and we don't because of his message. So Donald Trump is positioning himself to be a four-time loser. So is this the beginning of the Republican Party beginning to purge himself? Because, look, all the media is saying, you know, it's going to be a rematch of Biden and Trump. But my next guy, he doesn't think Trump's going to be the guy. That's why I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
No, thank you, Rick.
So you're still on the, it's not going to be Trump.
I'm still there. I was there last February. I'm there this February, and I'm there this April. I have just felt it's not going to be. Now, here's the tricky part to this with Trump. This has got to be a real zinger as to why he's not going to run. I mean, this one has to be thought out. This one can't be, I'll do it, I'm not going to do it because of my family. Okay. I mean, it can't be your normal thing.
Yeah, I want to spend time with my grandkids.
Right, or my health, because he's perfect. You know that. His doctor said he's the best ever, you know, in
best
the
ever.
History of the presidency. So, yeah, I just think there's going to be, because what you're seeing now, as you know, with Chris Christie's touring the early primary states, I watched Sununu on video last week. I was pretty curious to see how he handled a show he was on, you know. And I was watching him, what he said. And then, of course, you've seen the other candidates, Scott, Nikki Haley, DeSantis. Right now it's a DeSantis-Trump, you know, battle. More one-ended of Trump battling him. But you're seeing all of this. And one would say, why are all these people trying to or putting their names out there? And it's because I think in the back of their minds, they believe, and I believe this is the beginning, as you said on your show intro here, Rick, this is the beginning of the, you know, we're not going to have you anymore. The beginning.
Yep.
But there's still this solid base. And let's face it, there's a lot of candidates have the personal fear of what Trump is going to say or do to them.
The retribution, yeah. No.
Right.
I just thought it interesting that Sununu fired this shot because now I'm waiting for the volley back, the carpet bombing from Trump. But it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and how eventually they do take him down, because you're right. He's not going to say, I'm going to go spend time with the grandkids. Nobody buys that. And it's certainly not the health issue unless he's flat on his back. It's going to be interesting. Now we see
now
that Pence is saying that well before late June, he's going to decide if he's jumping in.
Well, Pence can't win the primary, but, you know, because he was, you know, the person that was supposed to grab the gavel and make Trump president. So, you know, he can't win that,
that
primary because he didn't do his duty. Behind Trump, and this is why I said this a year ago, in the back of Trump's mind, when, you know, no one's listening, he's not talking to anybody, there has to be the number one fear he has. The number one fear in his complete lifetime is to lose the second time.
Yep.
Now, he can run around and say it was stolen, you know, and everybody can run to the Capitol again if they want, but to actually physically lose for the second time. If he lost the first time, think this through for a second. Be Trump for a second. Can you do that?
I'm going to try. I'm going to put on my orange hat.
Am I asking too much of our friendship? But be Trump for a second. You don't run again for whatever reason, but you only lost because you didn't actually lose the first election. It was stolen.
Right.
But you know how much are they going to buy that the second one was stolen? All right, so that's what I think's up.
No, I'm with you. I just think that all the things are pushing in the direction where I don't know that there's a Republican who's going to bring him down. I don't think the base is ready to give up on that, on that, that, that dream of, you know, we're gonna take this back. Every day I'm still seeing the blue check mafia on Twitter going, we need to instill, we need to put Trump back in. In fact, you know, I'm reading some of these Congress people, and Ronny Jackson's tweet came up. Of, you know, just, you know, the country's in, you know, is failing, you know, everything's going to pot, it's terrible, it's horrible, we need to bring Trump back. And I'm going, you know, I remember when politicians weren't this horrible and this wanting misery. I mean, it seems like they're I look at this debt ceiling fight. It's like they want a major recession now. It's like they want what they believe to is happening to actually happen.
Well, it's also the leadership realm here. You know, if you go back to on the Republican side, Democrat side was a bit different. Nancy Pelosi had been around a long time. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi, I was there when she was minority leader. She didn't, you know, as Speaker, take things to the floor that she would lose. You know, she was comfortable with what she was doing. She'd been around a long time. You look at the modern history of the Republican speakers, from Boehner, who was, you know, driven out on the railroad line, you know. And then you look at Ryan, who left before that happened, of course. And then now McCarthy, who did, what, 15 rounds, finally defeated his own caucus so he could become, you know, Speaker. So you look at that, and it just, if you go back to Gingrich, who really, on the Republican side, was the last leader as a speaker, he really was. And I know because he had a caucus of 50, and I was very proud of this, 50 labor Republicans. And he would feel, you know, our temperature. And then the old bulls, as I call them, would, well, you know, you can't cater to these people. And Gingrich would say, this is a melting pot of people. We're going to consider what they want, you know. So when you look at this and then you come to modern times, you know, yes, you're right. They're out there seeking, you know, someone because they believe they have no one. So the leadership vacuum is, you know, can be very helpful, obviously, to the Democrat side. Now, one caution I would have to the Democratic side is this, though. You know, don't sit there and think that, and I don't know what you think of this, but don't sit there and think that, oh, Trump runs, it's done, we beat him, you know?
No. I fear that we have a situation where, you know, who knows? Because look, Democrats are doing dumb stuff. There are some dumb stuff that I'm going, you know, why are you doing dumb stuff? Stop doing dumb stuff. This mortgage thing, all weekend long, I'm attacked by every right wing person going, why is Trump, you know, or why is Biden doing all this to people with good credit scores? And, you know, and I'm going, at first, I'm like, this has got to be a joke. There's nothing, there can't be anything to this. And then you find out, yeah, they're doing something stupid around credit scores. Instead of saying, look, and to make it easier for people to buy homes, let's invest in low-cost housing and make more affordable housing so people can get mortgages on those affordable homes. They're fiddling around the edges, which is just dumb to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, this struck a nerve in me. Well, first of all, I had the two people, and one of whom works on flips for me, and he is a union guy. He's a union Democrat, okay? And he called me, and this is how I found out about it. He said, you know, what on earth's going on? And I said, well, what are you talking about? And I actually told him that's probably not happening. That's what I told him. And then I got on Google and found out, okay, they're considering doing this. And his point was, you know, I've worked hard, I've got two kids and my wife, and, you know, I've worked like a dog for my credit score, why should I pay more money, you know? And the reason it hit a nerve in me, Maxine Waters and I was ranking, she was ranking member for the housing subcommittee I chaired. We called in Fannie and Freddie and other groups and said, we want you to help the, you know, disadvantaged, the poor, the minority community, you know, people that need help. We want you to invest your portfolio in them. So that's how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't make somebody else pay. And maybe enough people, you know, scream about this. On the bigger picture, though, I think that, you know, the Democratic advocacy groups and, you know, labor unions, et cetera, the powers to be, people like yourself, you know, on radio and media, need to express to the Biden people, you know, Yeah, calm down. Keep it simple. Yeah, you know,
don't do dumb stuff.
Bread, butter, and wallet.
Yeah,
bread, butter, and wallet.
Stop doing dumb stuff. This now, look, I understand the premise behind it. I get the idea.
Mm-hmm, I do too.
The idea is poor and working class people of color have lower credit scores and are charged higher rates. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into this by not having, you know, the kind of down payments that we would want. There's a lot of, there's a lot to this, but you don't punish the people who were doing the quote unquote right things, or were, you know, were fortunate enough to be able to do that. You don't do that. You make it so that, you know, you create an environment that helps people up and not pushing people down, especially, right. You know, just dumb.
And it'll be incumbent upon the Biden administration to do it the right way, because, you know, Trump's not going to.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the premise of the Biden campaign? We aren't Trump.
Right.
I mean, that's part of his campaign.
No, and this is the part that I think is really important, Bob, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, the reality is there's a lot of obstacles in the way of working class people, especially marginalized communities. And the fact that Trump was going to do nothing. I mean, Biden's trying something. I don't agree with it. I think it's not a good not a good look. But I guess trying to help some folks, even though I think it's the wrong arena. As I said, I think we should be making low cost housing. But we should be building Levitt towns again in every community. When my grandparents, you know, when the World War II generation came home, you saw poppings up of small to medium sized homes that working class people could afford, and that to me is the way forward. Not continue to go dance around the fringes with this mortgage nonsense. It's crazy to me.
Well, it is, and my father bought his first house when I think I was 9 or 10, when he was able to buy his first house, and he had the VA, and, you know, things were kind of simpler at that time. I mean, there was an idea here, we're going to, you know, and we had a small little house, but it was cool. It was our house, you know?
No. My grandparents, the same story. They bought their house in the mid '60s. They bought one in the late '50s, one again in the mid '60s that they eventually spent their lives in. But, you know, back then it was like, I think they told me it was like $16,000 in 65. And yet by the middle of the 70s, their mortgage payment was a day's pay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right. So it was affordable. It was solid housing. It was solid brick, 2x6 construction. It was a solid little house. But, you know, like you said, it was theirs.
Right. And, you know, and it's like my grandfather, you want to talk about forced labor. He was 10 years old when they took him out of school. 10. Put him in the glass house down in Blair, Ohio, the age of 10. He worked 63 years, worked till he was 73. He had five kids, raised them. He had a house.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at stories like that, and your grandparents and mine, and it worked, but you can work it without, you know, my grandfather was helped, but somebody else that was, you know, doing a little bit better off wasn't necessarily not helped, so... There's a balance there.
Yeah, there is a balance. Look, yeah. I'm in favor of giving a hand up, but this idea of pushing people down, that makes working people down makes no sense to me. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. Got to get your thoughts today on the big story of the day. No more Tucker. Tucker evidently signed off on Friday thinking he was going to be in on Monday, and that didn't happen. My question is now, where is America going to get their misinformation? Now who's going to tell us who to hate?
Well, you know, I thought about this one because if you look at his programming, which was very, very fascinating, because as people debate this, you have to look at one thing. As of Monday morning, Fox was previewing his show because he was going to have Vivek Ramaswamy from Ohio, who's running as a Republican for president, and he was going to have him on his show, and they were previewing that, right?
Yeah.
That was Monday. Tell me what happened, like, instantly. This wasn't something that, you know, was being debated. It almost makes me think there was some kind of hallway argument or something in the hallway. Also, and I don't know, but I'm going to throw this out here. Something that's not talked about much, it was in the media, but Tucker Carlson couldn't wait, you know, quote, till Trump wasn't around anymore. You know, all the anti-Trump comments that,
sure,
that he survived because he took the tapes from the Capitol and made them a Trump day. You know, that's why I thought he survived with Trump. I'm just wondering, you think there's anything behind the scenes from Trump?
I don't know.
I'm wondering.
You know, there's part of me that goes, you know, as these lawsuits keep coming out, all of this information keeps coming out, you know, maybe there was something in there about Murdoch, because that's where my mind was going first.
Oh, good point.
Maybe it was something personal there that because this sounds personal. Because originally I'm thinking, well, there's a lot of talk in Georgia. You know, Fannie Willis is talking about, you know, there's going to be a bunch of people. Maybe he's somehow implicated in that. I don't know that, but that seemed kind of far-fetched. This just seems so quick, so, you know, kind of an at-will situation where that's a door, that it had to be something personal.
You know, you might be right, because if you look at this now, and people, there's two directions you can go on this, Fox's perspective and Tucker Carlson's. And I pointed out to some people, you know, that were messaging me, I said, listen, he might be Tucker Carlson, et cetera, and he has this huge viewership, which he does, et cetera, but he really doesn't want to leave Fox, okay? Look at the others who did. You know, where are they at now? Then on the other hand, he's been bread and butter money for Fox. So you're probably right. Something had to have happened very personal, because Fox was hanging on and he was hanging on in a sense, and all of a sudden they weren't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and who knows? Those emails were just starting to get juicy. You know, if that had went to trial, wow. Wow.
And look, you know, because there are so many things that came out in the last batches. You know, I'm sure as this goes on and, you know, there's the Smartmatic suit coming up, you know, maybe he said something to somebody if he has to testify. Who knows? But this sounds like this was a passion. This was a passion thing. This wasn't something that lawyers plotted out. This had to be a spur of the moment kind of, you know, you dirty, you know what? And it had to be. I got to think it was that.
Well, like I said a second ago, the hallway thing, you know, they had this guy on the show, they announced it, and it was one of these things where the two of them were walking down the hallway. I don't know, maybe one of them went to the restroom, the other one came in, and boom. Yeah, that was it. You never know.
But the reporting coming out says, you know, Tucker was shocked. Had no idea. I mean, now how much of this is true, I don't know.
Why?
But, you know, some of the reporting out of it was, you know, it's a shock and nobody knew. And, you know, he was blindsided is what the one story was. You know, maybe he'll write a book and make a profit off it. Here's the other question. Do you really care? I actually don't. I never found him all that interesting. I found him, like, just between you, me, and the four walls, you know, like he was probably, as a kid, a lunch money victim. And just, you know, one of those kids that you just... I don't know. You just wanted the smack.
Now, you know, that is interesting. Yeah, right. And you know, as a kid, he had a bow tie on at school, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Now imagine where you grew up, okay?
Oh.
And a kid coming in. Okay, hear me out. Because I know where you were raised. You're in school and a kid comes in with a bow tie, you know? You might have said, give me your lunch money. I don't know.
No, I was that kid. I was, you know, I was the poor kid. I was the poorest kid in the whole school.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been you. Somebody else would look at that bow tie and say, give me your lunch money. Somebody in your class. Come on, you know.
Oh, there's no question about that. He would have gotten beat up in my circles daily. And I would have been glad, because I was the kid. I was the smallest kid, so I was the one.
I
was the white kid, so I got beat up a lot.
There you go. Now, the question to this all, though, is this, because you make a great point. You know, who cares? Well, Tucker Carlson has a following, and that following is going to be loyal to him unless Fox can move somebody in.
And who do you think that's going to be?
Well, they've got a couple ways. They can either move Hannity up and then find a new Hannity, or they could do like the Gong Show. Bring somebody on every weekend and see who wins.
The Gong Show. There you go.
Yeah.
Crazy Gong.
Yeah.
All right.
Could do that.
All right. We'll see. I mean, we're going to see how it plays out, because here's the thing. He's not there at that slot. Somebody will be. And the question is how much worse is that guy going to be? Because I'm a devil you know kind of guy. I'm interested to see how much worse the next guy is going to be.
But, well, they're going to have to. I mean, look, Fox is in this for money.
Sure.
As the corporate media can be, obviously. But they're going to want somebody. They're not going to want somebody that's going to be like, oh, you know, I'm the new calm Tucker. No, they're going to want somebody.
They're going to want crazy.
They just want somebody that's not going to do nasty emails against the boss.
No, but so Don Lemon isn't going to be his replacement.
Now the, you know, would, oh wow, just think, this would be a great move, maybe.
No, I put that out today. I said this would be a good fantasy baseball trade.
Wow, you put Tucker on CNN, and you put Don Lemon on Fox, and then you see what everybody does. Wow.
I don't think CNN would pick up Tucker again. He was already fired from there. Because, you know, Tucker got fired from all of them, from CNN, from MSNBC, and now for Fox. Right. It's like the hat trick.
Right. But that would be a good trade, man. That would be fantasy TV. Wow.
I mean, as long as, you know, while the end of humanity is happening, we got to have something fun to look at.
Exactly. Yeah, I would tune into both of them to see how it was being handled, right? Oh,
absolutely. Don Lemon would have the highest rating ever because everybody like me would tune in just to see how, just to see if he would transition.
Right.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow.
What's a thought?
Finally, I want to get your thoughts on one more thing. Remember the police officer who fatally shot Breonna Taylor and all the stuff in Louisville that went on around that?
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts about him getting a job at the sheriff's department?
Really?
Yeah. Evidently, they decided to put him on as the Carroll County Sheriff's Office. I guess they confirmed it on Saturday. They hired this Miles Cosgrove, the guy who was fired from the Louisville Metro PD for violating their use of force procedure and failing to use a body camera during the raid.
Well, I know we had one... We had an officer hired in my home area. I don't remember his name, and he came from Cleveland, and he was involved in a shooting controversy in Cleveland. And most people felt he should never have been hired, and they hired him anyway. He didn't last long.
No,
you know.
No, I think
the pressure
about
was. I can't imagine that. They would do this. I mean, there'd be another profession he would have to undertake, you know?
Yeah, anything but this. I mean, just, you know, that...
Yeah, it happened in a small town and back home, and it did not set well.
Yeah, it happened in Cleveland, too. I mean, the guy who shot and killed Tamir Rice had been fired at another... Or had got fired and then, I guess, ended up getting a job somewhere else.
You know, we used to have this happen with some of the superintendents of schools, who were fired from places that they should have done a check. Why, you know? And they kept getting hired till finally the public's like, we don't want this.
Yeah.
And I know in the small community in Eastern Ohio, they didn't accept it. So I just can't imagine where this guy would be at home there. And, you know, he should probably look for some other, you know, line of work probably.
Let's hope they keep him inside.
Wow.
Maybe that's the job. You're the guy who shuffles the paperwork. And they give him a gun, but no bullets. He has to put the bullet
no
in his
bullets,
pocket.
Right.
Like Barney Fife.
Exactly. Right.
Now I'm dating myself talking about Barney Fife, but, you know, it is what it is. But, Bob, I appreciate the time. Got to tell
you,
love the cell phone signal you're getting from India. I wish I had that kind of cell service in my backyard here in central PA.
I just was telling somebody yesterday, I cannot make calls from certain areas of downtown Newark, Ohio, but I can from Udaipur, India. So tell me why, you know?
I wish I had that service.
Yeah.
But enjoy your trip. Enjoy your time in India.
Thank
I know
you.
that's your happy place. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Ney. Seriously, I mean, I wish I had that kind of cell reception. In my neighborhood, please. I drive, you know, a mile from my house and make a left. Forget it. It's over. This is where I'm hoping Biden, you know, that broadband stuff we've been talking about, let's do that quicker. In fact, we should get that money out the door much faster considering the fact that Republicans are hell-bent on clawing it all back. Think about this for a second. Their argument is we're going to claw back all the unspent money, which means all of those improvements to our infrastructure that I've been looking forward to and that we need desperately as a country. Republicans are saying, no, we can't have that. Those jobs that would be created, no, can't have that. Need higher unemployment so we can push down, you know, that cost of labor, make people more desperate. Crazy, crazy, crazy times we are living in. But if you missed any of today's program, the podcast is always available. Free, easy to share, easy to find. Just look up The Rick Smith Show on any of your podcast platforms and you will find our program. Take it on the go wherever you go. Listen at your leisure. Also, if you got questions, comments, something I said got under your skin, I certainly want to hear it. Angry emails go to the top. You can email me at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You are listening to WA.